Welcome to The Automators. I'm David Sparks and joined by my co-host, Rosemary Orchard. And this is where we talk about how to automate your technology to do your work for you. Hello, Rose.
Hey, David. How are you?
It's episode 150. Very exciting.
150. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's our, what is it? It's not a bicentennial because we've had the centennial. So yes. Is it centennial and bicentennial? I don't know. There's got to be a fancy word for it.
Centennial 0.5, would that work? Centennial 1.5, really, right?
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's something with like demi-centennial in there. I don't know. My brain's not entirely functioning in the wordy sense of the world at the moment, but that's okay because it's still functioning on an automation level. It's exciting. We've done this for 150 episodes, and I don't think we're going anywhere anytime soon because there's still so much to talk about automation-wise. So yeah, I'm very glad to be podcasting with you.
Seems like just yesterday you and I were sitting in the lobby of a hotel in San Jose, plotting out the future of automators, and here we are. So that's good.
I mean, we you say that, David. I believe at that point we'd actually recorded like two like trial episodes, and then you know the wonderful folks at Apple were like, oh, by the way, here's Shortcuts. So we just had to throw it out and start over again. But, you know, that was probably a pretty good sign that automation is important to people because look at where we are now. You know, folks said that workflow wouldn't be as good under the Apple banner, but I'd argue that it is so much better than it could ever have previously been because it's got such deep integration and automation in general has just come so far in such a good way.
Yeah, and more to come, I expect. I feel like we're going to get even more like AI-themed automation in a few months from Apple, too. So I can't wait to see what we have next. But it is nice to stop for a moment and just appreciate and enjoy getting to episode 150. Today, on the bonus section for members, for the Automators members, we're going to be talking about my experimentation with a new search engine called Kagi. I'm actually paying for Search Engine Rose, and I have lots to share about that, so I'm looking forward to talking about it. But today's episode is all about file management automation. This has been coming up between us in our kind of personal conversations and sneaking into the show. We thought we should stop and just kind of catch up with it. There is a lot you can do with file management automation today. Today, we're going to cover a bunch of it. What we are not going to cover today, however, is Hazel. Hazel is an app specifically made for file management automation. We've done shows on it in the past. We will do shows on it in the future. But if we start down the Hazel rabbit hole, that's a whole episode. So we thought, let's talk about file automation without Hazel, because both you and I, although we're avid Hazel users, we're also finding lots of ways to automate file management with other applications. And I wanted to put a spotlight on that today.
Yeah, I mean, I do kind of, if we get a chance, want to sneak in one particular Hazel rule that I've been experimenting in, or just one action that is available, because it is really useful. But yeah, I work with files for a living. I'm sure most of us do to an extent, you know, even an email is a file, folks. There's so much that I've ended up doing recently just to try and make my life a little bit easier, especially at work. You know, I've been dealing with, I've got something comes in, it's potentially a customer issue, and then I have to make a ticket in our system about it. But while I'm investigating this, I kind of need a folder to stick all the stuff in. So I'd like to start, David, if it's all right with you, by talking about some debug folders that I've been creating and how I'm automating their creation, because that is, of course, the actually exciting part of this, because I'm not just, you know, like go into this folder and make a new subfolder named this and blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm actually doing some smart stuff with it to try and make it, you know, easier for me and just more sensible to run.
Okay, so explain the problem and how you're solving it.
Well, the problem is basically, you know, if I'm investigating something that's, say, a customer issue or something we think is a customer issue, I need somewhere to stick files. So these could be, you know, sample outputs from the application at work, or it could be a database query that I've run and outputs from that database query, various things like that, somewhere to just stick notes files that are related to this so that when I come back to find them later, they exist. Also related to that, I want to automatically create some special files in these folders so that I can easily, if I'm, debugging, thing 1, 2, 3, 4, I can, inside of folder 1, 2, 3, 4, I have links to the customer support ticket and our internal ticket where we have, more information so that I can jump to it. So to start with, I created a shortcut. It's a very exciting shortcut. What it does is it starts by asking me for two pieces of information. It asks me for the ticket number, and then it asks me for a title. And it uses these two to create the folder for me. Very simple, right? And it just puts the number in front and the description behind that. And then it asks me for, or it gives me a list. And it says, hey, would you like to have a customer ticket referenced? Would you like a internal ticket referenced, or do you want none of these? It will let me choose from more than one of them. And then it just goes through what I've chosen and says, okay, so if you want to create an internal ticket, what number? What number do you want? Okay, here it is. And it creates a special file, which actually opens the URL for that ticket. So it just asks me for the number, and then it pops that into the URL and does that. It does the same with the customer ticket. And then finally, the final piece of the puzzle is that it reveals this folder that it's just created in Finder. So I can run this shortcut, which I have assigned to a Stream Deck button, actually. And then once that is, done, it pops open the place where I can then shove all of that information and see everything at a glance. And it's very simple. It's really only creating a folder with a nice name and putting some helpful files in there. It also creates a notes.md file, which is just an empty file. And I open that in BBEdit so that I can get on with any notes that I need in there. That's it. But it does make my life a lot easier because it's just a little template project, basically.
Can you get me a screenshot of that, Rose? And we'll put that in the show notes so people can see the...
I can't put the actual a screenshot of the actual shortcut that I'm doing for creating the whole folder system in the notes because it's got the name of the company where I work and sure. Some other internal information in there. But I can put the shortcut or a version of the shortcut that I have created to create that file, which opens a URL into the show notes so that folks can experiment with that. It's very simple to do. It just pops up and goes, what's the URL? You paste in the URL and then it creates a little file for you that when you double click it, opens that file in a browser. But that does make my life, honestly, a lot easier when I'm doing all this stuff at work. I don't want to have to know that it's this number and then go and open the ticket system and type in the number and find the ticket and so on, when I could just double click and done. Simple.
Well, Rose, thank you for starting the show in the deep end.
Yeah. It's one of those things. Like, basically, I'm just creating a folder and I am creating a couple of files in that folder and then I'm showing myself the folder. That is, the really simple high level view of what I'm doing. But it just so happens that some of those files are magic files that open URLs for me because it makes my life easier.
All right. I want to go back to the shallow end for a bit before I go to the deep end. I have a few deep end recommendations, though, but there's a couple of things that I think if you're looking at file-based automation that are separate from Hazel that you should consider. And the three apps that really stand out for me on this are file managers. Forklift and Pathfinder are two, and they are Finder replacements, but they both have elements of automation attached to them. And then the third one is Default Folder X, which is a save dialog replacement, which has automation involved. So let's start with Forklift. Forklift has been around for a while, but I felt like it started pretty shallow. It didn't have a lot of depth to it, but it has always been good for FTP file transfers. And I think that was its superhero move. Like, I remember in the old days when I was writing books for Wiley Press, I was using the FTP client out of Forklift to get stuff up to my editor. And it's just always been good for that. But I lost track of it for a while until about a year ago. It's part of SetApp, and I saw they had an updated version, so I went ahead and downloaded it. And I'm like, wow, this has come a long way. I feel like This is a real practical finder replacement with a lot of automation built in.
Yeah, it really is. And honestly, I do love Forklift. I use it every time I release an episode of Automators. I have a favorite in Forklift, which opens the local folder where the files that our lovely editor, Jim, has edited for us and put together. And then it opens Libsyn's FTP on the other side. Because for me, the way I work and the way my brain works, it's faster for me to upload those two files via FTP. And then go into Libsyn in the UI and just be like, okay, I'm importing the file that I'd already uploaded here, go. And just, you know, click a few buttons. It takes a few seconds there that way. Whereas I feel like, I don't know, something about watching a progress bar in a web browser just feels slow to me, I guess. But, you know, it doesn't really matter if it's faster. It works better for my brain. And that's one of the things I like about Forklift. It's really easy to set up your favorites. And you can have, if you've got, say, a server, like maybe you're using Amazon's S3 storage, you can have that and you can immediately, you know, your favorite can go straight into a subfolder, but you can also map a local folder. And when you open that favorite, it'll open the local on the left-hand side and the remote one on the right-hand side. And I love that.
Yeah, I mean, you've keyed in on one of my favorite automations of this app is the favorites. It not only can favorite a path, but it can sync those favorites. So if you've got a desktop and laptop like I do, you open up a Forklift on different machines. It's using iCloud on the back end to do this, but it all your favorites show up. And that's not something that works with the built-in Finder, right? You have to kind of re-designate your margin. They don't even really have favorites. So it's really nice. And it creates automation in the sense that everything is just super easy. Another piece of it that I like is the Dropbox support. I feel like they did a really good job of making Dropbox work with it. You know, Dropbox wants to do more under the hood than Apple really wants it to. But with this third-party integration, you can right-click to get your share links and all that stuff. Just, I feel like, is really beneficial.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree.
Another automation piece of this is the multiple window view. They have tabs like Finder does, but it seems like it was in Finder, this is an afterthought, whereas in Forklift, it's a built-in feature. So if you want to have multiple folders open and just be moving files between them on different panes, Forklift to me is just tops in this. Of all the apps we're going to talk about as Finders today, I think this one is the best at that. And it's just the way it's pretty, you know. I guess that's the thing I want to say is it's just pretty. It renders it. The typography is good. It's easy to read. It's easy to work with, and it makes managing files more pleasant, which, you know, makes it easier.
Yeah, I agree. And there's just something about having file management made a little bit easier. You know, there's things that you can change in Finder to, you know, preferences that you can set, and so on and so forth, but at the end of the day, it is nice to just have an application understand what it is that you would want or need and give you those basics to go with.
A couple more automation features I noted this. I was going through this week just kind of writing things down. And keyboard control, way better than Finder. You can do anything from the keyboard in this app. At least I haven't found something I couldn't keyboard shortcut, which obviously is a huge automation win. And they have an app deleter built in. I don't know if that's even worth mentioning, but as an automator, we delete apps. We don't want to have to go through and manually find the related files. Hazel does this too. A lot of the apps, frankly, we talk about today will do this, but it catches when you delete an app and it gets rid of the support files and all that other nonsense that continues to take up space on these limited SSDs.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you don't necessarily, you know, think about this sort of thing until you've got it. Like you don't know what you were missing until suddenly you discover, like, oh my, wow, okay, this is a thing that can happen. And there's a whole bunch of apps out there which, you know, can do the file deletion. Whenever you delete apps, it'll go off and find all the stuff related to it. But I feel like it makes sense built into a file management application.
All right, let's talk about the other one here that I think is an automation tool as a Finder replacement. That's Pathfinder. Pathfinder is like the ultimate tool belt of file management. Have you used Pathfinder Metros? It feels to me like this would be one that you would be all over.
I tried Pathfinder back in the day, and it was okay. It just didn't really gel with me at that point. I mean, I think the thing that, always keeps me primarily in Finder versus anything else is the fact that Finder has to be in the dock. Every other application on your Mac, you can take out of the dock. Well, everything is at the bin. I think the bin has to stay in the dock, and so does Finder. Everything else can come out of the dock, but not Finder. So that means that I kind of don't want to, sacrifice another dock icon and increase the size of my dock when I can just use Finder. Forklift has found a place, in my life. I don't use it all the time, though. I only use it when, I'm wanting to, compare two folders or similar and things like that. I primarily use Finder, but I should definitely give Pathfinder another try because there's a lot of nice features in there.
Yeah, it really is the kind of the power tool automator version of a Finder replacement. You can batch rename, which, usually is a separate app. It can compare and synchronize folders. It can merge folders. Both Pathfinder and Forklift have better hidden file support than the built-in Finder does. One of the things I really like about Pathfinder is the drop stack, where you can just drop files into it. It's like a shelf, basically, in the Finder. I wish Apple would copy that feature. I think that's often useful, like when you're going between things. They've got also, of course, multi-pane support and that other stuff that you get, with a Forklift. But it's a nerdier version of the Finder is the only way to put it, really. It's got better sorting features, and it's just really. If you ever felt like the Finder is like holding you back, this is worth checking out. And I do think it really kind of can fit into file automation routine because you've got all these tools available to you.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. And honestly, it's just one of those things where you've really got to play with these things, right? And try them out and then give it a little break if it's not gelling with you and come back to it at a later date. You'll end up finding, so that's how I can, now I get it. And it just kind of clicks. Like you were saying about that little drop zone or drop stack in Pathfinder, I use Yoink for that because is always there whenever I'm doing things. And I do have macros and automations that add things to Yoink for me. So when stuff appears in my downloads folder or whatever, it gets popped into Yoink because that's where I'm going to need it. Realistically. I use my browser to take screenshots, like the actual feature that's built into Firefox. And this is for work things, to, screenshot this particular element that's on the screen. Whenever it does that, it downloads the file to my downloads folder and it pops up in Yoink for me automatically. I am using Hazel, I'll admit, to get it to appear in Yoink. It's just the open in app. Action, yeah. But I specifically said it to Yoink, but I'm trying to talk about Yoink here because that is one of my, favorite go-to apps. Another app that's kind of similar to that, which does have a drop stack, is Drop Zone on the Mac, which is also part of Setapp. But what I like about this is, you grab a file and you drag it up to Drop Zone, which is living up in your menu bar by the clock. But you can have a bunch of folders up there, but you can also have actions. Okay, so one of the actions that I have is install application. But you can also have AirDrop is there, email is there, shorten URL, save text, and there's a whole bunch of actions on their website as well that you can, download and give a try to. So that is definitely worth investigating because I have written actions for this because of course I did. I'm a nerd. But you don't have to be able to write actions. You can put a shortcut in there. And if you've got a shortcut, whether you've borrowed it, stolen it, or created it yourself, that you want to run on files, that it takes files as input, then you can stick that in Drop Zone and drag a file onto it and off you run.
Yeah, I am a big fan of Drop Zone, and I guess I'll just add that on as a file management tool because I have in Drop Zone, it's a shelf app, so you can put things up there, but you can also lock them there. So as an example, I have locked versions of the artwork for the Automators, Mac Power Users, and the Focus podcast and the Mac Sparky logo. And I just have occasions where I need to drop the logo on to something or the internet, and it's always just waiting for me there in drop zone. So any kinds of files you use, like for your work that you frequently attach to things, you add it to drop zone, and then it's just there for you. But you can also have it as a temporary shelf where you just put it there to get it somewhere else. And then in addition to the actions, you can have a folder and file manipulations, like, and you can copy something to, or you can move something to. So as an example, I will often put files into my action folder. That's kind of my clearinghouse with Hazel. And I you know, we're just going to talk about Hazel once in a while because we're doing file management show. But like I said, I really want to save Hazel for another day because we need to give that adequate time. We need to kind of really dig in. But I want to put files in that folder so Hazel can do its magic. And so I've got a move to action folder action in drop zone. So I can grab a file anywhere and just move it. And then the little drop zone opens up. I drop it on that folder and off it goes. But you can also use copy. So like if I want to put something on the desktop temporarily just to work with it, I've got a copy to desktop action there. And I've got a bunch of them. Another one I have is move to burn bag. I've got a folder called the burn bag and files go in there. And after 3 months, I believe they delete automatically. But when I'm working on something and I send a file off to somebody to work on, but I want it to be around long enough for them to finish whatever they're doing, but not forever. I just move it to the burn bag with drop zone. So that's a really, it's another really powerful file automation tool.
Mm, yeah, they also have some other built-in actions like one to rename and move files, which can be really helpful for, you know, various things. Like if I'm throwing something into the automators folder, then, you know, I'm going to have it renamed before I do that so that, you know, you, David, and Jim will know who it comes from. And they have built-in actions for things like uploading to Amazon's S3, uploading to Google Drive, sending via messages, opening a URL. I mentioned before that you can run shortcuts. You can also run AppleScript. And there's, you know, there's other actions that you can download from their site as well to install, like installing the applications, things like that. There's also like a YouTube downloader, unzipping files. There's a specific one for creating a new note in SideNotes, if that's an application you've ever used. It's a kind of like Yoink in some ways, and that it's like notes that float over on the side of your screen. But yeah, there's printing options, there's getting the finder path. What I have to say I really love about Drop Zone is because you can add folders and apps to it. And when you've added, say, a move file or a copy file folder into Drop Zone, so it appears, you know, across the top as one of those, you know, target actions. If I just click on Drop Zone and then I click on the folder, it will open the folder for me. So it's not just like single purpose of, well, I can only like drag the file here to move it there or copy it there or rename it and move it there. No, you can actually click on it as well and ta-da, you can open it. And I think the things like that are really useful. You know, they've got built-in actions for doing things like resizing images and stuff too. So definitely, you know, it's something that seems very simple on the surface of it. And it is in many ways, but when my hand is on the mouse, because, you know, that's what I'm doing, it makes sense for me to just drag a little bit further up to the top of my screen. And those are the most commonly used things that I need right there in Drop Zone.
I'm actually struggling to figure out the balance between Drop Zone and Yoink, because I find I use Drop Zone the most, but Yoink is also very powerful. How do you decide which one you're going to use when you're doing file manipulation?
Well, so, I mean, this might be a bit of a cop-out. I don't use Drop Zone for the Drop Zone. I don't store files up in Drop Zone. For me, the beauty of Yoink is that it's on the side of my screen. If there's nothing in it, it goes away. It's hidden. If there's something in it, I can see it. And for me, if it is out of sight, it's not just out of mind, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And I will probably never remember that it's there until the next time I go to do something in Drop Zone, at which point I'll be like, oh, there's that file. I was going to do a thing with that. And then I lose the thing that I'm currently doing and everything goes wrong. So I don't put files into Drop Zone. I put them into Yoink. This is really silly. Just for insanity's sake, I did actually add Yoink as a target in Drop Zone. Because sometimes I'm dragging a file and I'm dragging it and I go up to the top right corner because I'm thinking I'm going to move it. And I'm like, actually, no, it's in the right place. I just need to see it on my screen. So I have Yoink in there as well as a target application, which is perhaps a little bit too meta or silly or whatever. But you know what? When my muscle memory goes wrong and I drag to the top right instead of the bottom left, I have a 32-inch ultra-wide monitor, folks. I can get my mouse all the way from the top right of my screen to the bottom left of my screen without having to like pick it up and move it. But it's a little bit more work than I feel is necessary. So when my muscle memory goes wrong, I decided that I was just going to put in a little shortcut to help me fix that problem instead of, you know, giving up and starting over again.
That kind of makes sense, honestly, because, you know, the real advantage of Drop Zone is the automation and the power tools. So I could see segregating those. This episode of The Automators is brought to you by LinkedIn Talent Solutions. Go to linkedin.com/automators to find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free today. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find out quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. It's so important that you build the right team. You want the people with the right attitude, the right qualities, the right mindset. And to pull that off, you need the right hiring tools. Back in my law firm days, we used to put ads in the paper and we got this mix of people, so many of whom were just not qualified or the wrong people for the job. It took so long to find the right person. LinkedIn Jobs handles all of that for you. It filters out the people that don't make sense and gets you just the right people that you need. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. It has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. Hiring is easy when you have that many quality candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. LinkedIn also knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. That's why they're constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. It's easy to see why 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/automators. That's once again, linkedin.com/automators to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. And thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for all of your support of the Automators podcast.
Well, one of the other applications that I feel like we should talk about here, David, is Default Folder X. Because, you know, it's one of those apps that people always end up asking you, wait, so how did you do that? Because usually what happens to me, and this happens for some reason or somewhat regular basis when I'm screen sharing, is I'll need to save a file, okay? And I'll have the folder open in Finder and it'll kind of be like behind the window of the application that I'm using and just a little bit open. But that's, you know, that's the file that I need or the folder where I need to save this. And so I go to save the file and it's opened up, you know, the save file dialog. And then I can just mouse over to the existing Finder window and click, and it updates. It doesn't switch to Finder. No, it updates the path that is currently where I'm going to be saving the file in that application. And that is the thing that I think catches everybody's eye. Default Folder X is unsurprisingly designed for setting up, you know, default folders when you are saving something in an application. So whenever I save a text factory in BBEdit, it defaults it to the folder where I keep all of my text factories for BBEdit and things like that. But, you know, you can, I mean, for a really long time, I'm ashamed to admit this because I didn't dive into all the features properly. For a really long time, I literally just used it for I've already got a Finder window open. I'll just click on that and it'll update the where I'm going to save the file in the current application. And that made me very, very happy. But there's so much more that you can do.
Yeah, it really feels like Default Folder X started with one feature and It's been around forever. I mean, the reason it's called X, I believe, is because it was on, it predates Steve Jobs' return to Apple. It was either on Next. I think it was on Next and then came to the Mac with Steve Jobs' move and the transition back in the day, or it was already on Mac, but it's just been around a long time. And the, as I understand it, I think it's a father-son development team. Like the dad developed it and the son learned to code and now the son helps. But it's just like, there are so many great features in this app. And it's kind of like file management by cutting off the file management at the pass. Like you just get the file managed because you save it in the right place to begin with. You can add the tags there. You can easily get to the right folder. Like Rose said, you can just click on a folder in the Finder and it updates in your save dialog box. That's bananas, but it works. And I use it all the time. It gets me in trouble because I screencast and forgot to turn it off sometimes. And then I get all these emails. Oh, I like that thing you screencast about, but what is going on with your save dialog box? You know, because people don't know about this app. So it really is, I think, a great file management tool. And this is kind of a broad stroke show. If you guys want us to, we could do a whole show on automation, I think, with default folder X. But this is something you should definitely check out if you're looking for ways to ease up on your file management. But I also do want to go into the deep end of the pool, Rose. And I've got one. Well,
before we do that, David, I just want to say I went back in the default folder X block, okay, to find out, you know, where, you know, how long this application has been around. And their very first post on their news is from the 23rd of October, 2007, where they're actually saying that they've moved everything and there's, you know, old news is elsewhere. So they were around before 2007. However, the third post on their news section says, David Sparks over at SurfBits has posted a nice review of default folder X explaining how he can no longer deal with Macs that don't have it installed. Always nice to hear we've got someone else addicted. Well, David, it's a couple of years after 2007, you're still using it. I think that goes to say how great default folder X is.
Yeah, it is a great app. And that is so funny. I never knew that they referenced that. SurfBits was a podcast that I contributed to back in the early days when I was first getting kind of started in this stuff. It was run by a dear friend, Tim Verporten, who's now left us. But yeah, that's great. I love hearing that. but I want to go to the deep end a little bit. One of the tools I have increasingly relied on for file management is Keyboard Maestro. And I'm going to share a screenshot of this so you guys can see it. But there is a method in Keyboard Maestro to move files. And that's what I really wanted to do because it just makes sense to create actions in Keyboard Maestro to move assets. And I do it all the time. And just a few examples of how I use this. It is a one-step macro that will move a file to wherever you designate. So when we finish today's show, I will go into the folder that I have designated to save these recordings. I'll select the files of our recording and I'll push a button on my Stream Deck and it'll trigger this Keyboard Maestro script to move the files to the editor's shared folder on Dropbox. And I've done this for a bunch of things in my life. The one I'm going to share is one where I share stuff to be edited with JF, the editor at Sparky Media. And I've got a folder on Dropbox we share called Desk JF. It's his desk. Basically, I drop things on his desk. And the trick is, it's a simple action, but you've got to like kind of follow the screenshot I'm going to give you. So it's a selected file. So the status of the menu is selected. So we have a select file action, and then it executes the following actions. It looks at the path of the selection. So it's looking at the file that you've selected, what's the path of that? And then it copies the file to the new path. And the way you select the path is you just hit the folder in Keyboard Maestro. If you're familiar with Keyboard Maestro, this is a common action when you want to select a destination folder. Don't try and code it in. Just hit the little folder selection, go select it. I select it here in the Dropbox library. And then it moves the file there whenever I see it. And like I said, it's a one action Keyboard Maestro script, but it works really nice. And because it's a script of Keyboard Maestro, I can easily attach it to a Stream Deck button. So like this one, where I copy it to JF, I don't move it. where I copy it, I've just got a Stream Deck button with his smiling face on it. And anytime I have a file I want to send to JF, I just push his face on my Stream Deck button and off it goes. And anybody, no matter what job you have, if you think about it, like if you repeatedly move files to a certain location, you don't have to open the Finder, you don't have to drag anything, just select the file, push a button on the Stream Deck, and off it goes. And I find that to be something I use daily.
Mm. Well, I also have some very similar actions in Keyboard Maestro for moving files. But I, as always, David, I kind of took it to the next level because, you know, we're me. It's me we're talking about, right? So when we sit down to start recording an episode of Automators, I use Bunch, actually, to get things set up. So it opens Safari with the right tabs and it, you know, it does a couple of things. One of those things that it does is it asks me for the episode number, okay? And bonus, it automatically increments it from the previous episode number. So I just have to click OK if I'm happy with it. When I click that OK button, okay, and this is right when we start recording, it goes, okay, so she said, this is episode 150, because this is episode 150. I'm going to go off and I'm going to make an episode 150 folder in Dropbox where we send all the files to Jim. So Jim will find all of the 150 files together. And then when I'm done recording, the place that I put all the files that are recorded using, I have a specific macro for recording for Automators, or it's not a macro, it's a Audio Hijack, it's a session, that's the one. So I have an Audio Hijack session just for Automators. I've got one for each different kind of podcast. When I finish recording, and so I hit the stop button at the end, then the files stop being edited, right? Keyboard Maestro is watching that folder. Not Hazel, folks. Keyboard Maestro. Keyboard Maestro is watching the folder. And Keyboard Maestro waits until the files are no longer being changed because I've said, hey, when this folder, which is the Automators folder where I store the files, adds an item and ignore partial or changing files, this is really important, then it goes over all of the files or the file that triggered it, and it will rename it, okay, because it, my files automatically get saved with XXX at the start for the episode number. So, you know, that XXX today will be replaced with episode 150. And it will change that from XXX to 150 and move that into the folder 150 for Jim, because of course it does, which makes my life a lot easier. But it's also remembering 150. This isn't this is a regular Keyboard Maestro variable, so it gets saved and kept around. Because when somebody, like for example, last episode 149, we had the lovely Simon Stovering on. When he uploaded his file, it went into a guest recordings folder. Well, Keyboard Maestro is watching that folder, and it will just move the file from guest recordings into episode 150 because it's using the variable in the folder name to just move it right in there for me every time. And our show notes get automatically created as a file when I click that 150 as well, which is, you know, it's kind of a, well, it's file management because I don't have to go and create the file. And it opens that in BBEdit for me. And honestly, this just makes my life a lot easier. And it means that Jim doesn't have to chase me for files anymore, which I think he appreciates. And the files just end up where they're supposed to be. So yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm using Keyboard Maestro to move files too.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, that was the thing we really wanted to cover today, is that there are a lot of tools available to you to automate file management. And I think this is something that's easy for automators to ignore. Like, you just kind of get used to, right? Opening the Finder, digging for the folders, dragging things, waiting for them to land in the folder, hoping you don't hit the wrong folder. But this is an area ripe with automation, and you should definitely be checking it out if you have it. Check out some of the apps we've talked about today. Rose and I will share screenshots of some of the automations we've done, and we'd love to hear from you on the forum on ways you're automating your file management. There's just a lot of ways to skin this cat, but you should be looking at it, because the more you can automate this, the faster it is and the more accurate it is. And you know, those files on your hard drive definitely are a needle in the haystack if you get them in the wrong place. So automation not only makes it faster, it makes you less likely to have an error. So check that out. I also want to talk, Rose. I've been enjoying this segment we've been doing about things we're automating, because you and I are both always experimenting. And you told me you're up to some battery some battery automation, for lack of better words. What are you doing?
Well, you know, you got to get charged, David. I have been having some problems. It has been unseasonably cold in the UK. Well, I say unseasonably cold. Like the 1st of March, I woke up and there was a bunch of snow outside. We don't really get snow in the UK. We get rain. And it's fairly consistent rain. It's drizzly. It's gray. It's usually too warm for snow. And then we don't get snow. But I woke up on the 1st of March and there was snow. And understandably, I have been dealing with all of the fun things that come hand in hand with cold weather, including things like batteries dying in various sensors and smart automation things around the house. Because I'm sure folks will be sort of vaguely aware, if your smoke alarm battery dies, it usually dies at like 3 o'clock in the morning, right? It's somewhere like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. That's usually because that's the coldest part of the day. I didn't have to deal with that because I have a system which tells me when certain batteries are running low and need charging. And I have been attempting to expand that. And one of the things that I have been doing as part of this is I've actually been using Home Assistant for this. There's a lovely integration called Battery Notes, which goes through and it has a library of devices. And what I really like about this is that library of devices can be used by anybody. So even if you don't have Home Assistant, okay, if you've got a smart home device and you're like, okay, but I don't remember that Acara motion sensor that Rose recommended. I've got the model number here. I can find that in HomeKit. But I don't know. I can't remember what kind of battery it is. You can use a library to find out what kind of battery it is or if it's rechargeable, etc. Because that it honestly does make a huge difference when you're there going, okay, so I need to A, find out which devices have low batteries, and then B, I need to have batteries to replace them. Because there's nothing worse than going to replace something with like a standard CR2032 battery, only to find out that it's, I don't know, a CR2450 or something like that. And it's not using the kind of battery that you thought it was. So I've been going through working on actually replacing all the batteries. And it's amazing how long you can go on like very low levels of battery. But the area where I don't skimp on the battery changes, David, I've got to say, smart locks. Yeah, as soon as that sends me like the first warning that it's getting low, I go and I replace those immediately. I don't want to get locked out of my own home thanks to my smart locks. Everything else I try and push as far as I can. And I've been switching to rechargeable batteries in some cases. Unfortunately, a lot of smart home devices really don't like rechargeable batteries for some reason. It's very frustrating. But many of them do, or many of them will tolerate it now. I've been finding if you get the right ones. Having a system that can tell me, hey, this device's battery is running low, it's an X, is so useful. Then when I go to replace the battery, I can make sure that I actually have the right battery on hand. So, you know, when I climb up the stepladder to get that motion sensor that past me thought sticking up near the ceiling was a good idea. It is. It gets a great view of like my entire hallway from one motion sensor. Yeah, but when I go up the stepladder, it's nice to have the right battery with me so that I can just replace it straight away.
Yeah, a couple of notes on that is another one you definitely want to not miss out on is smoke alarm batteries because, you know, the thing where it starts, you know, beeping in the middle of the night. I just have a 6-month repeat task in an OmniFocus and I just change them all in one afternoon. And I know that I could probably get longer out of them than 6 months, but I am done with getting up at 3 a.m. and wandering around the house, you know, because the chirp is very high pitched and not that directional. And you don't even know which one it is. You're just walking around the house half awake with a ladder, which is never really good. The other thing I wanted to show you, Rose, I'm sending you a message right now. This is just somewhat related to the topic, but I have Gridfinity 3D printed all of my battery storage, and including all the coin cell batteries. And I found models that have the names of the numbers on the side. And I feel like such a boss now. Like when a battery starts going on any of these coin things, I just go over, pick the box that has the right one in it, pull it out, pop a new one in, and I'm good to go.
That is really good. Yeah. And I'm glad to see that the way that you're storing the batteries as well, there's separation between them, because it does bug me when I see somebody, they've just got like a bag of batteries and all the batteries are just kind of in there higgledy-piggledy, because depending on the way that they connect up, they can actually discharge themselves. And so you can go to use what was a brand new battery and you just kind of like threw it in this bag because, you know, there was one left in the pack, just throw it in a bag, right? Make sure you're storing your batteries properly, folks. There's a reason why they store them all up the same way when they come in boxes or the coin cell ones. I know it's really frustrating that they're all in kind of like blistery packs with cardboard on the back and it feels like it's very inefficient, but it does mean that those actually, you know, won't discharge themselves. That's worth it. What I do, David, is not as fancy as your Gridfinity. I may have to Gridfinity up my approach in the not too distant future. I have the plastic zip bags that you can get, like the ones with the sort of mesh woven into them. I use these for storing all of my cables, but in particular for coin cell batteries, I have... sort of like pencil case or A5 size ones of those with large labels on. And I just put like the blister packs in there so that I've got, you know, I've got a big bag which says batteries on it. And so I can grab that and I know that's all the batteries. Great. But then inside of it, I can go, right, CR2032. And I'm not trying to like scan on the packaging and find out where this one says in the top right and this one says it kind of in the top left. And then this one says it in a shade of blue that is basically invisible on the other shade of blue that is the background or whatever it is. You know, I can just know, okay, I've got these. And when a bag's empty, I also know to rebuy them, which is quite important so that I don't actually run out, because it's nothing worse than going to replace a battery and finding that you don't have any of that kind to replace it with.
All right, I've got a little automation I'm working on. This was inspired by a Labs member Ward. We do these meetups in Max Market Labs, and people share nerdy tips with each other. And the topic of the Apple Watch Ultra came up, and Ward was doing a thing where he presses the action button, and it records his voice. Then eventually he gets that into whisper transcription and gets transcripts of voice recordings that he makes while... just by hitting the action button on his Ultra watch. You could also do this with a complication. You don't have to have an Ultra watch, but I thought that was a good idea. And I've been thinking a lot about transcription or recording my voice as opposed to dictating the voice where you see the words appear at the same time. I do think there's something to the idea of just speaking without seeing it, the computer try to transcribe you, that kind of frees you up to think more about what you're saying. And I just think that's kind of a natural next step, as the AI transcription has dramatically improved over the last year. So I thought, well, let me see if I can put something like that together myself. And I'm using a couple apps, and I'm very happy with this automation. I've been using it a few weeks. I just put out a video to the Labs members showing them how to do this. But it's using an app called Whisper Memos. And Whisper Memos is another one of those apps that records your voice, then uses AI to transcribe it. But they do a good job of it. And there's several, like the developer, I feel like kind of like takes the extra step. He has it add paragraph breaks. A lot of the whisper transcription paragraphs don't work. They just do like individual sentences as separate paragraphs, and he makes it into paragraphs. He has the ability to have a privacy mode where it deletes the recording after it does the transcription, and he has the ability to send it to any email. And that's what really got me, because at the same time that this app was kind of showing up on my radar, Drafts added a mail drop feature. And now in Drafts, you can have a magic email address and you send an email to it and it shows up in your inbox in Drafts as text. So combine those things, right? You record it and then you hit stop record, and then it does its thing to transcribe the recording, and then it emails it to your magic Drafts email, and then it's just in your Drafts inbox. So I've got a way now to push one button, talk, and then the transcription done very reliably via AI shows up in my inbox. Then you take the next step. Whisper Memos has shortcut support, and you know, mm-hmm. It's not a lot, because there's not a whole lot you can do. The app does one thing, but you install the app on your Apple Watch, and either via complication or the action button, you trigger this feature where it starts a new recording. And with the Apple Watch Ultra, all I have to do now is press the orange button and start talking. And then when I hit stop, everything is just handled. And I'm putting so much text in that way. It's awesome.
one of the things that I've always loved about drafts is the fact that, you know, even when iOS dictation didn't have like that longer time, which it does now, dictation on iOS has improved a lot, is that drafts had that sort of endless one, where you could just write, you know, dictate for a really long period of time, which was really clever. And I really like that. But one of the things that I have got into the habit of with voice notes in particular is using just press record, because I, in particular at work, we have a lot of special words, which could be misunderstood as another thing, or it gets, you know, auto-corrected to that, or whatever. So what I've been doing a lot is using just press record if I need to remind myself of something for work purposes, because then I've got the audio transcription as, or I've got the audio and the transcription. It's not an either or, I've got both. And that is really useful. And it also allows you to import an audio file. Because you can just import an audio file that you recorded elsewhere. So if you recorded something in voice memos, then you can import it to just press record and it'll do the transcription magic for you. And then you can, you know, share it off out to other things, which, you know, for me often is drafts for a lot of this stuff. But yeah, there's so much that you can do with the action button. I have a little action button hack for you, David, if you'd like, because it's something that I have been automating recently. Changing the shortcut assigned to an action button is frustrating, very frustrating. If you want to experiment with, you know, a different shortcut on your action button, it can, you know, it feels like it takes a long time for to go through. And I found that it crashes sometimes, or at least it did. The latest beta seems to have fixed it a little bit. Changing the shortcut was, you know, quite problematic before, and now it's less problematic, but it's still not super fun. So what I did is I created a shortcut called iPhone Action Button. And all it contains is a run shortcut action, which chooses which of the action button shortcuts that I'm currently using I would like to run. Now, this may be more of a problem for me because in particular, I have iOS Today, where we have a Shortcuts Corner segment every week, and folks write in with shortcuts questions and I try and answer them and solve them live on air as part of the show with a little video, and then they get a shortcut link as well. And so there's questions about the action button quite often, so I need to change what action is being run from the shortcut button. But if you want to, you know, experiment and have like two versions of your action button shortcut, and you just want to like switch to the new version and see if it works without having to go through the whole rigmarole, then you may want to consider like a parent iPhone action button shortcut, which, you know, chooses which of the other ones to run and just runs that, because I find using the run shortcut action is much easier to choose which shortcut to run using that than it is through the action button settings in settings.
Yeah, I do it somewhat similar. Mine is contextual based on the focus mode. So the action button, it's a different action button depending on which focus mode I'm in. And I just created, you know, what's the most likely action. Like if I'm at Disneyland, it's the camera. If I'm working, it's a choose from menu with a couple different things. And so there's a lot of ways to do it. I'm talking about the action button on the watch for this automation. And it's really quite useful. It's not hard to create. I'm just continually impressed with the state of voice to text dictation arriving as the AI models are getting smarter and smarter at doing it. It feels like we've turned a corner.
Yeah, I think we really have. We'll just have to see what happens with all these things. But it's definitely one of those things where we're going to find out how useful AI actually is for various different job roles and so on in the not too distant future, and how much it can help people. I know, you know, autocorrect and things like that, and suggestions while typing have been around for a really long time. And it's, you know, it's really good to see that sort of thing. But as it is, it's also, you know, really good to continue with all of the other things that we've been working with, and you know, see what happens for all of that fun.
Okay, so that's going to do it for today. We are the Automators. You can find us at relay.fm/automators. You can go to our forum at talk.automators.fm. Thank you to our sponsor today, our friends at LinkedIn Talent Solutions. Stick around for Automators Max. We're going to be talking about my new search engine. And otherwise, we'll see you next time.
Okay, bye, folks.